Lost my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feeling sent you, teacher said, to the bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast. But a fanfic of a fanfic itself is a synthesis between My Little Pony, the popular show about pastel horses, and Fallout, the post-apocalyptic show. Oh, I fucked that up so bad. Oh, one of them is...
Because you were thinking about it. You were thinking about fucking up.
Yeah, I was thinking
anyway,
about fucking up.
Anyway, it's a hybrid of Fallout and My Little Pony.
it's Fallout and My Little Pony, and I did them in the wrong order. I was going to do them in the wrong order.
Also, like, this is a fanfic of that fanfic.
Oh, we're super off the rails already. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
No, you most certainly are not, for I am Sir Weirdington Esquire.
Oh, man. This is why I have a prepared speech on a paper, and I'm like, I didn't need it this week. And of course I did. I'm a stupid, dumb idiot. Of course I do.
It was doubt that stopped you. Like, I knew, I feared that you would let it get to you.
Yes.
When you reverse the order of things, and you just started sliding.
Fear is the mind killer, after all. But yeah.
As well as hunger and faith. Anyway,
yeah.
Good podcast. And it's my job to tell you about what happened the last time we did the podcast.
Yeah.
Which sucks, because we do a podcast about a piece of fiction that's real bad, and it's traumatizing to have to think back on anything that we've talked about before.
Do you want to move a little bit closer to your mic? Unless you are close to your mic.
No, I was trying to edge my way out the door and hoping you wouldn't notice. Because now I have to do the recap of last week. And I'm drawing a blank. Try and work from the back to the front. So it ends with our heroes deciding they... Wait a minute. Does it end with our heroes deciding that they have to go to a prison?
Yeah, and then they split up. That was the end of the chapter.
Why did they split up?
Because they can't keep up with Blackjack, because since Blackjack is so cyberized now, she can essentially run forever as long as she has power, and they literally can't keep up with her pace anymore. So.
Oh, okay, and also they talked about how that's still super not psychologically healthy, that she's, like, cruising for burnout.
Yeah.
But instead of heeding their advice to take in any kind of self-care at all, she takes off in the night while they're sleeping.
Which is a big mood.
But unfortunately, it's not like... In a story that makes sense, this would be, like, incredibly stupid to head off into a new unknown danger without the support of, like, your longtime team. But because of the, like, meta rules of this story, Blackjack is the only entity in the world allowed to, like, exert entropy and alter, like, anything. Like, alter the course of, like, events, or, like, so they're not actually capable of accomplishing anything without her. So It is kind of a bummer that they cease to exist because they leave her line of sight. It's sucks for them.
Yes. They've been deloaded to save memory space.
Did anything that matters happen?
Besides dealing with, like, 21's drug problem, they fight some harbingers. A lot of the chapter is just about, like Psycho Shy hanging out with Blackjack and, like, learning that she's the coolest.
So absolutely nothing happened.
No, nothing happened.
We fought the second stringer raiders. We fought the putty patrollers with the, like, Lord Zed chest plate on them.
Yeah, so they're stronger.
We dealt with a drug problem that manifested out of nowhere two chapters ago.
Mm-hmm.
An invented, contrived problem. And then a villain that I don't like talking about gets converted over the light side by way of basking in the awe of the glorious self-insert character.
Yeah. Basically. These last, like, three chapters have all been, like, just nothing has been happening. So, you know, that's always fun. Those are my favorite chapters, the chapters where nothing happens. And nothing, no progress is really made. But not today, not this week. This week a whole ton of shit happens.
Well, let's get into that before I start talking about how weird it was that... I'm really stuck right now on in, like, the... Not second season, I guess, but second phase of Power Rangers. When they introduced a new villain to replace Rita, they, like, for an entire episode, the stronger Putty Patrollers were stronger at a problem until they realized, wait a minute, we just punched them in the chest plate and they're instantly defeated. And then now just chest plate Putty Patrollers are in the mix and they, like, nothing has fundamentally changed. That's what the fucking Rebukers, what are the new...
Harbingers?
Right.
Yeah.
Harbingers.
Well, they're essentially just raiders with, like, guns that can hurt Blackjack, specifically.
Right, so Putty Patrollers with Z chest plates.
Yeah, it's the oh no, Superman's weakness has been found to be kryptonite. Well, every villain's gonna have kryptonite now. Because there's no way, like, any of them could have fought him up to now. It's pretty bum.
Right, so, what happens this time?
A whole lot of shit. So, this chapter included, at least on the first reading, my favorite fight scene of the entire book. Not book. The entirety of all five books. And we will have to see if it holds up particularly well. This immediately starts off, like, guns running. Like way more momentum than we've had in the last couple of chapters. Blackjack is on the run. She's being chased by Harbingers. There's a kind of fun scene where she, like, dips into a, like little, like, scavenger's little camp for, like, 2 seconds. And there's kind of, like, a funny, like, gag of her, like, trying to buy stuff really, really fast while still being, like, you know, looking over her shoulder over the Harbingers and, like, bullets whizzing and, like, the scavenger being pretty, like, unfazed by this, which I thought was kind of fun.
Is this just the skit from Life of Brian where, like, he just wants to buy the thing, but the merchant insists on haggling?
Well, no, like, the scavenger is just, like, whatever, like, just buy whatever, and, like, but is, like, unfazed by, like, the, like, wall of chaos behind Blackjack, which I thought was kind of a fun, like, it's a fun opening to this chapter. But yeah, a lot of the early parts of this chapter is Blackjack trying to get out ahead from the Harbingers because she can't fight them all because she just doesn't have the, like, bullets, basically. We get a kind of a bring
to live, gotta steal to eat, and you're my only friend, Abu.
BJ has a weirdly confusing philosophical conversation with Clippy, who for those not keeping score at home, is what we've downgraded Skeleton Horse down to. On the revelation that he's just
nihilist Clippy.
Yep.
Try hard nihilist Clippy, no less.
We get a pretty like confusing philosophical debate where Clippy lies the blame. He argues that blame isn't the same thing as responsibility, and there's a lot of like weird confusing things that doesn't really like amount to anything. It's a weird excuse to be like, you are responsible for all the bad things that are happening, but it's not your fault that they happened. And it's a very specific philosophical framework so that we can still empathize with Blackjack for being bad, but we can't blame her for doing bad things because it's not her fault that they happened, which is a take, I guess, whatever.
Lord, I've thank you for forgiving me and understanding that my actions are not who I am.
Yeah. It's definitely an appeal to faith. But yeah, BJ manages to cross one of the couple of bridges through territory across the bridge to where like the ranger territory is. So like yay, we're back into book two areas. Let's see what's happened to them. So we get a lot of description of like how everything's gone. Basically, everything has been burned to the ground because, like, even though, like, I thought the Reapers lost this, like, pretty handily, apparently they went back and, like, burnt down the entirety of the naval base that the Rangers were using and made sure that, like, all the other, like, encampments they had have been burned to the ground. Which, like, it's just kind of funny to me. It's like, Reaper's pretty obviously lost, but they're like, well, we're gonna blow up your buildings anyways. Like, it's...
I mean, the past is losing coherency. Now, like, it's kind of a sad state of affairs that, like... a few chapters ago, we mentioned that Rampage's original creator, some mouth-breathing chud, who was, however, the only editor willing to tell Somber no, left the production. And so now, without the project's only editor, who isn't just a typesetter, who isn't just a copy editor, is gone. The past is now losing coherency. I think that might explain why, like, the Megamart was burned down. Nah, the Megamart was just kind of annoyed.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned this a lot, but this is a concept that I'm stealing from a friend called Calvin Balling, which is just like literally making up the rules as you go along. That's pretty much always the case when it comes to these kind of like stories that are always written in forwards. Like, you can't go back and really edit things. So, like, there's a certain level of like forgiveness you have to take with things being retconned. We'll get to a retcon that happens in a few paragraphs that I still don't agree with because it's dumb. Like, it's I understand why they want it, like, why Somber wanted to, like, retcon this detail from this faction, but it, like, it's a little too late to fix the image of this kind of shitty group, and I'm not a huge fan of it as a decision.
There's a lot of good stories that are told by way of Calvin Ball, but the important ingredient of a good, enjoyable game of Calvin Ball is that when you make up a rule, it remains consistent.
Oh yeah, like, of course.
At this point, it's the worst conceivable game of Calvin Ball, because like rules are forgotten.
Yeah, at earliest convenience.
Yeah, no, like it's not that much of an excuse. Just like.
Well, I know, but I'm trying to prop up our case for this why we complain about certain things about the story, and like, it's not that Calvin Balling is bad, innately. It's just that in this story, it doesn't really like help. It's already so confusing. A huge thing that's been told to me multiple times is this story is really fucking confusing, and I feel like that maybe that's just my failure to orate this properly, but at the same time, this story is really fucking confusing. Like we have essentially run out of new locations to go to, so we're just retreading a lot of like places that we've already been, but they're not really like effect, like they've been kind of changed but not nearly enough, and a lot of it's very just like background aesthetics and not really like significant changes. Like, Megamart got burnt down, okay, whatever, it didn't, but then when it didn't, it also didn't get changed severely enough, in my opinion. Like, there's kind of a token idea that like, okay, they've become more militarized and the gun's gone, but like realistically, like, there should have been a way harder sell on like no one has any faith in the Finders anymore, and like this place is like a ghost town because very few merchants are even willing to trade here because they know it's dangerous and it's not going to save them. But it just isn't really felt there. It's just it's business as usual, but everyone has more guns.
Oh, that does remind me. We can't talk about it long because we've got so much ground to hoe ahead. But like, it really has like put a finger in the eye of trade will save the waste. Especially given that, like, okay, the Finders have lost a lot of material power to enforce things themselves. Therefore, things like the Megamart are, like, on, are dying out or are on loose legs. When, like, if trade will save the waste, then, like, then shouldn't everybody have a enlightened self-interest to, like, protect the Megamart and maintain, like,
yeah,
and put bounties on people who, like, attacked the Megamart and so forth? But no, because everything is hyper-individualist, and because at the end of the day, might literally makes right in the eyes of the author. This is pretty clear. Nope, if the Finders by themselves are not capable of maintaining security on things that belong to them and them alone,
mm-hmm.
even though they're public spaces that function for the greater community, then they don't deserve to exist, and they can only like reinforce themselves by virtue of pure militarism, as opposed to like reaching out and like.
Yeah, I mean,
friendship.
Well, I was gonna say this is the setting. Like, this is the land friendship for God. It's just that, like, we talked about this before in original FOE. That's considered a bad thing. In this, it's just business as usual.
It is an assumed truth of the universe. Anyway, so what happens next?
So PJ wanders through Ranger territory, out trying to outrun these Harbingers. When she runs into a bunch of like gangers that are just kind of like around a campfire, and they're all just like talking about how shit the Reapers are, which I thought was kind of funny. Like, in contrast, it's supposed to kind of come across as like, oh well, it's dangerous. Like because Blackjack and vicariously the author considers the Reapers to be a public good, it's a bad thing that the gangers are hesitant to like keep with the Reapers, but in the context of our podcast, it's hilarious to have characters voice like the opinion of like, oh, the Reapers are shit, like, what the fuck.
Yeah, they're morons. They started this aggressive war with nothing to gain, prove that they haven't earned the loyalty of their foot soldiers at all. And like crush themselves on the rocks of this better established faction that only lost the greater war because of internal strife.
Yeah, and like a freak accident, basically, in the form of Blackjack and Nuke like blowing up that cannon.
So like these dudes are right.
Yeah, it's funny. It's just really funny that like even these idiots agree. But yeah, Blackjack like comes up on them and says hi, and they're initially like pretty spooked, but like they notice that she has the Reaper colors on and like realizes that she's security, and she's they back off on the concept. They all
oh shit, Blackjack has willfully run it, like had made the decision to wear Reaper colors,
I guess.
Like, okay. Okay.
Well, the only armor she has is like the Reaper armor that was given to her like chapters and chapters ago, so like she's been wearing the Reaper colors this whole time. Big Daddy and Big Daddy like press ganged her into being a Reaper, like,
yeah, I know that. But Horace Bronson declared like, okay, you're a Reaper now whether you like it or not, and like lives in a lawless wasteland. The Reapers have done fuck and all to help her through the like period where a group of a dozen wackos were burning down like towns, looking to harass her, and the Reapers did nothing. Like, it's just funny that she made the decision to capitulate to like his edict, his demand that like she now represents them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of telling, but because everything is so fucking Calvin Ball without a referee, it's so weird. I think it deserves comment that anything that happens in the story is so disjointed that it can only be a commentary on the author. Like it's
yeah,
because the rules are like the points don't matter. So, like, the points matter so little that like nothing, we're not forming a coherent world, we're not, like, being, like, told a coherent plot that we can really invest our suspension of disbelief in, so, like, all of this is just commentary on the author. Like,
yeah,
it's the only thing you can really, like, hang a hat on.
Well,
it's the only consistency in this in the morass.
I always say that the late
stage
version of Project Horizons is like a baffling meta commentary on itself, but like unintentionally, because it becomes so like hyperbolic in its own tropes. Like, it becomes so cliched. Like you know, like when a story goes on for so long and like it develops new cliches about its specific work. That's kind of what happens here. Like, it's, you know, there's only so many times you can hear, like, Blackjack pissing herself about how she's killed another group of innocents, to the point where it almost becomes comical and funny. That, like, oh, she just killed a bunch of babies and, like, is sad about it, but, like, I don't feel anything but, like, humor, because it's so ridiculous that it's just, like...
Rampage holding up a hoof. Yeah, man. What?
It's
what? I thought we were just doing a thing now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it just becomes like comical, and its construction. It's so often and so consistent and so much of the same bullshit that it's just funny. It's really hard to take seriously.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyways.
So yeah. What happened? We've got a lot of ground to cover.
Yes, we do.
So much of we're getting caught up on
every minutia.
Well, like the rogue mat says, pebbles ahead, but these are actually fairly substantial boulders.
Anyways, yeah, they go round robin and they all introduce themselves. They're all representatives of their various gangs, and I'll give Somber some credit. They are at least the good kind of representative of the factions, where they are, like, contrary to the immediate stereotypical assumptions of their given, like, factions, like, typical characterization. So, like, we get like Candlewick, who's one of the Burner Boys, and Burner Boys are all about fire. They love setting things on fire. But, like, his whole thing is he's, like, severely burned. And, like, that's a typical thing of the Burner Boys, that they're just all, like, marred and fucked up. But, like, he has a huge, huge fear of fire, and, like, his whole thing is, like, well, if I can, like, learn to use it, I can learn to control it. Which is a kind of basic stereotype, but still, like, I like it, because it's still... At least it's not just, like, I'm a one-note character, which is what I immediately assumed are these faction characters. We get Dazzle, who is just, like, who is a recuperative effort on the behalf of the Flash Phillies, because, like, remember way back when I complained about the Flash Phillies being, like, horrible because they're, like, another matriarchal society within the setting that, like, rapes men as a way of, like, punishing them.
Is motivated by rape to rape?
Yes.
Yeah.
We get a recuperative effort in Dazzle, as she's it explains that, like, no, that's all just made up. Those are all fake and hearsay, like, that we don't rape people, that's just, like, a thing that people spread rumors about for some reason. It's just untrue, it's just fake news. We get a guy named, like, Bleeding Heart or Broken Heart or Burning Heart or something like that. He's all sad. He's a member of the Half Hearts gang, which are just, like, their whole hat is that they're all, like, trauma and grief-stricken pones that have come together to form, like, a sort of, like, somewhere between a self-help group and a gang. And then we get Bluebell, the best character, because Bluebell's a Highlander, which initially thought they were Scottish because they're called Highlanders, but no, they're, like, cartoonish, comical, like, indestructible hillbillies, which, like, resonates to me on a certain level, regardless of how much of a stereotype it is. Like, her immediate thought with, like, meeting Blackjack is, like, I want to wrestle because I want to see how tough you is, and they just, like, beat the shit of each other for a while, and, like, Blackjack, like, earns a respect by, like, running her head through a car door, which is always, like, a good moment. Highlanders are ridiculous. We get a lot of explanation for them. Their whole, like, The Highlander's whole thing is that they don't consider themselves to be like they like historically never consider themselves to be like actual members of Equestria. They always like consider themselves to be an independent nation that was kind of like forced to be part of the empire, whatever. Equestria is not an empire, principality, whatever, closest thing. They don't like dealing with outsiders because they're all xenophobic hillbillies. I will say that these characters are better than the main crew, and I wish they stayed in the story, which is a consistent thing that happens. But all these characters have fun personalities.
Welcome back, crew of the Seaman.
Yes, exactly. They're just like the crew of the Seaman during the boat episode. They're all way more colorful and way more fun than the basic crew, and they don't have like complicated backstories that take like 40 pages to explain. None of them have, like, crippling drug problems that, like, almost killed their daughter or, like, are a baby murderer. They're just, in general, a lot lighter-hearted and more fun. But yeah, she hangs out with this crew for a while. Ta-da! First set of temporary companions that Blackjack gets for a little while. But, yeah, they have some fun conversations, and there's a lot of, they're chatting around the campfire, and then, like, the Harbingers all, like, descend upon them because it's, like, time for action to happen again. And like the fun thing about this is they have like a kind of like, all right, we don't necessarily trust you. You don't necessarily trust us, but we all got to work together to pull through this Harbinger shit. And they all work together relatively well to like stop the
that you brought down on us.
Yeah. Whoops.
We have to work closely with you to survive this thing that you brought to us.
But yeah, they fight. I forget the exact order of this, but yeah, they fight the Harbingers for a while. There's a lot of cool, like, explaining their backstories and their character while they're fighting the Harbingers, which is a, like, really efficient use of time, which, again, I'm surprised is coming from Somber, which took 3 fucking chapters of cooldown before we got to this chapter. But this is where we get, like, a lot of the fill-in. They all show off their respective skills. This chapter also gets bonus points for... Since Candlewick is one of the burners, he has flamethrowers, obviously. But, like, they work like real flamethrowers and not like video game flamethrowers, which I give, like, a lot of points to anybody that actually does that. Because, like, real flamethrowers literally throw fuel that's on fire onto things and not just, like, fire gas at stuff. So, like, flamethrowers are typically, like, you spread them onto things and they fire to death. Like, they don't, like, I don't know, it's a dumb, realistic pet peeve, but basically no one knows how a flamethrower really works, because video games have, like, lied to us for so long, so it's always cool when I see, like, a flamethrower that's working the way it's supposed to. Blackjack gets a cool cyborg ninja moment, where, like, she gets minorly separated from the crew, and she gets, like, she just kind of carves her way through a bunch of the Harbingers, and, like, all of the, like... these companions are like, holy shit, you're like way more dangerous than we thought you were. Like, I'm explaining this poorly, but like, she gets like a really, like, for once she gets a very believable push in this chapter, where it's not just like, we're not just told her skills are really good, we're physically shown that she's a very, very capable fighter. Like, Blackjack has one skill, she's good at killing people, so we should see that more often than we do. But she's very rarely faced against, like, actual tough opponents. So this is going to be a recurring trend in this chapter specifically. There is a lot of believable thrown against really difficult opponents and carving through them the way she realistically would, given how much she's talked up as being, like, an invincible Reaper horse. This is my, like, one of the few chapters where I have a lot of good things to say about the chapter. There's a downtime moment in between Harbinger raids where they manage to like get inside of a base, and like Candlewick is like really forward with Blackjack, like not in a kind of in a creepy way because Somber's a creepy raider, but like Candlewick is just like hitting on Blackjack, and like this is when we find out that Blackjack still has unresolved trauma, which we knew about, but now she is like violently incapable of being touched by men, and like tries to murder Candlewick by strangling him with her horse robot fingers.
Okay.
Yeah, it's best not to dwell on it. But yeah, a new a new wrinkle in Blackjack's character is that she can't be touched by men, or she'll just go bloodlust mode and just fucking try to kill them. But Dazzle, the member of the Flash Phillies, calms her down and reveals that, like the thing that I talked about, I revealed this before, but like it's still insufferable now that like they got this huge retcon that like the Flash Phillies are a entirely female group because all of them are rape survivors, like almost all of them are rape survivors, and like it was formed out of what is essentially like a like goofy post-apocalyptic feminist like support group turned gang. That is so gross to like. Also they used like again, Calvin Ball, we're just retconning everything to fix plot holes, but like it's still frustrating that like the first instinct was to make a matriarchal society that rapes men and then double back and say, oh no, they're actually like a gang of all lady rape survivors who are like trying to protect each other, you know, trying to protect their fellow sister and all that.
Pamela Anderson is a strong, independent woman in barbed wire.
Yeah, but she managed to calm down Blackjack by like kind of like relating a similar traumatic story, and they kind of bond over it, as you do. They end up getting caught up with the Harbingers. They get pinned down, and the like. Fucking moody half-heart horse decides to sacrifice himself for the rest of them to survive. It's kind of a nice moment for once, specifically because the person he lost that made him into that caused him to become a ganger. He just repeats the same thing. Like he literally says that he's just repeating the same thing she told him when she sacrificed herself to save him, which is kind of a cool like thing with this character. This character gets more exciting, interesting, sad death than like anybody so far. That took chapters and chapters to explain. But yeah, and they have a kind of moment where he admits that his real name isn't Burning Heart or whatever it is, and it's Lemongrass, and like Blackjack like reveals her actual name in kind of like a solidarity before he dies kind of moment, which is like, you know, good writing for once. I don't know. I'm grasping at straws, but like it's this entire story is always been grasping straws to try and like keep myself sane and enjoying this fucking piece of garbage. But this chapter feels like it was written by someone that isn't somber. Is the long and skinny of it. But yeah, they managed to get out from under these Harbingers, and they like bury them in a factory, basically. When they all like kind of like get back to like Flash Philly territory, and basically like Flash Philly and Candlewick are breaking off, and Blackjack and Bluebell are going to where the Highlanders are camping right now, because the Highlanders are thinking about joining the Harbingers, and BJ's trying to talk them out of it, basically. So yeah, there's a lot that's happening in this chapter, by the way. So to like very quickly recap, BJ's fought a bunch of Harbingers, and she has gone all the way eastward past the Rangers now. We are now in unfamiliar territory. But yeah, they hear some fighting coming off from some camp nearby. When BJ inquires on Bluebell what it is, it's like, oh yeah, that was apparently one of the old detention centers, and it's like, and we get a quick rundown on that, and it's just like, I lost my tempo real quick there. Before the war, and during the war, they had zebra like, you know, internment camps basically, and they hear a bunch of fighting coming from that, and BJ wants to go check it out. Basically just tells Bluebell to go on her way, and after like a touching moment where BJ makes a peace offering and gives them back stuff that Highlanders want, she decides to go with her. So like Bluebell stays in the party, yay. I like Bluebell a lot. I don't think I've done a terribly great job of explaining that, but like the
oh no, I think you've well enough communicated that she is a good-hearted, indestructible idiot, which is always a fan favorite around here. she has the indestructibility of a brick, as well as the IQ.
Yes.
as strong as an ox and almost as smart.
She's getting there. But yeah, so she's joined the party. I really wish she wasn't a temporary companion. She's way more fun than like Rampage and shit. Oh, also, speaking of Rampage, that reminds me that a detail that I don't understand why this is happening, but it starts happening here. Blackjack starts like hallucinating her friends now. Like she was hallucinating the past.
I think I can tell you why, but go on, and I'll chime. I have a hypothesis, and I want to hear more before I chime in with it.
But yeah, she starts hearing the voices of all of her friends in the middle of conversations and stuff. But I don't fucking know why it's happening.
I do.
But yeah,
let me tell you why.
We'll get to it. We got a little.
No. Like it's because Somber has no restraint as an author, not even a little bit. The entire point of this whole fucking thing is because he keeps getting feedback on like cast bloat, and so like okay, let's do a change of pace. And frankly, like at this point, it seems like Somber can't even think of anything to do with the main cast. Because Scotch Tape is just inventory space. Rampage was somebody else's baby, and that dude is left. He's finished out 21's first, last, and only character arc, and Fallen Glory is currently Rainbow Dash.
Well, it sounds crazy when you say it like that.
And so currently there's nothing to do with him. And so he's cut ties and currently doing a different thing with a different cast, but he doesn't have the control. He has no willpower. He has no self-control. And so like he wants the main cast to be able to make commentary on these events. So Blackjack is now hallucinating that commentary, hallucinating their continued involvement.
Oh, it's fucking amazing. Oh, that's all right. Headcanon accepted. That's the fucking greatest. That's
my hypothesis.
I think that's probably not too far off. It sounds like a very utilitarian decision, and I think you're right there. But yeah, anyways, moving along. Yeah, they go into like this. They start sneak up on this detention center to like get the like hoedown on what's going on. Along the way, they like talk about a big mountain, which is plot relevant for later. But like part of the like the geography of the area is the big pony is called the Black Pony Mountain, and it's just a very very large mountain, and it's most important in backstory context for nothing that matters. But it's just a big mountain. Exists. Don't worry about it until later chapters when we visit it. But yeah, they creep up on the on this detention center and they get a good look at it, and it's like is immediately as dire as you immediately expect something like a concentration camp and a pony fic would look like. But yeah, zebras and pegasi are fighting. They're like, well, if either of these two are fighting, then they definitely like want something here. Like neither of these factions like do things for no reason. The Pegasi are here for something, and so are the Zeebs, so I need to check it out. There's a lot of creeping around as, like, the gunfighting is happening, which is kind of fun. They steal a big old box of explosives, and then rush into, the proper prison. Like, the actual, like, prison building. Like, the main like, actual, like, prison facility for the camp while getting shot at. There's a weird moment where they go into the building, and it's, like, all, like, weirdly sealed and all automated. And they have to like go through some, like the processing area for it, and there's like a whole kind of like slapstick moment where like the thing keeps trying to ask like Blackjack's like an identification and zebra number and all this other shit, and just rattles off like random numbers and stuff like that until the thing just gets fed up with her. Like it doesn't actually have an ego; it's just like, oh, you must be for special processing is what it determines, and. God, this fucking chapter's so zany. But Blackjack gets teleported, like a blinding white happens. And he, that and you get that like ozone smell, and then she just bamf in a different location. She like narrowly avoids getting a bomb collar strapped to her neck from the automated like defenses, and so it gets like hooked onto one of her hooves, and she gets teleported into a like charnel pit. Like it's just a pit of dead bodies from centuries ago, which we get a new wrinkle about how enervation works in this chapter. Enervation can apparently also preserves corpses. I don't know why it does it. It just does. So like, despite the fact that this is 200 years old, she's not in a big pile of skeletons. She's in a big pile of like gray corpses of zebras. She's in some sort of like locked room that has a bunch of like reinforced glass on it, and there's like no way of getting out. And she like scavenges around for a while and finds like a bunch of like corpses, scavengers, and some Pegasi enclave, and reckons that like people have been coming here for centuries and getting trapped in it, and then like dying of starvation in this like corpse pit, and then their body just doesn't even decay, so they're just like a fucking meat sack just sitting there. It's all very, yeah, like edgy Newgrounds animation, just sitting on a pile of flash animated corpses.
Yeah, too bad there's no way for her to get out. It's not as though she has like hydraulic legs.
Well, about that,
they can pound against the wall forever with infinite stamina.
Yeah, well, Bluebell also gets trapped in here as well, and they try to figure out their way out of this, and their plan becomes they just like kick the reinforced glass until they get a small hole through it, and they're like, okay, this isn't gonna work, because it's like it's one of those windows that's like reinforced glass and there's a wireframe in it, so there's like no real way of getting through. But Blackjack hashes it, and it's like, okay, again, clever plan, cool use of robotics. She's like, oh well, I can my mouth is built so that it can like dissolve minerals, so maybe I can eat this glass. So
maybe you can move like 3 feet to the right and start kicking the more brittle concrete.
I mean, it's very clearly a room they can't break out of, except for this in really specific case.
Whatever.
It's the DM isn't gonna let you do that moment. You have to solve my puzzle. But anyways, there's a almost comical scene of Blackjack eating a hole through like reinforced glass for a while.
I keep telling people Matter Eater Lad is the most powerful superhero in the Legion of Superheroes.
Yes, she is Matter Eater Ladding her way through a reinforced glass wall, which is again still kind of cool because it's a good use of cybernetics. Like the thing I keep talking about is I really hate that like Blackjack became a cyber pony and then like that didn't change anything. It was like a lateral upgrade at best up to this point. But yeah, after she gets a belly full of reinforced glass and she feels real sick about it, glass doesn't seem to agree with her robotics too well. They manage to escape. They fed a turret.
BJ, why do you gotta swallow?
Well, where else are you gonna put the glass? Like, okay, so that is a good point, but at the same counterpoint, Blackjack is also the kind of idiot who's like, well, of course I have to eat the glass and swallow it. Like, what else am I going to do with it? Waste all this perfectly good glass to eat? But yeah, they get out, they blow up a turret.
Mama said not to waste food.
So I'm going to eat this glass. But yeah, try to explore a bit more of the building. We learn about its dark, tragic past that doesn't matter. Boring, generic administrators were evil and tortured these zebras instead of giving them like proper thing, which like is over the top, but also like accidentally reflective of current events in a dire way. That these were initially supposed to be relocation camps, and then they just became concentration camps over time. And then it also gets revealed that, like, the, like, administrators have been selling off the food, like, the excess food they've been getting, so they've, like, they're trying to pack in as many zebras as they can in these camps. Which, again, would come across as ridiculous had, like, the last couple of years not happened.
Well, no, I mean, that's the story of, like, I don't know. The thing that's really throwing me, and this is a sign that, like, did somebody else, is there a ghostwriter involved here? Did somebody else come in and pitch it and write this chapter? That's the story of every concentration camp ever. Like, this isn't, like, the current concentration camps we have are in all ways nothing new. Right up in, including the refugee crisis angle. That, like, these foreigners, these unwelcome outsiders are flooding into our country. What was a talking point in 1930s Germany? Because people were still fleeing from, like, the most unlivable consequences of World War One.
But I mean, the very specific level of like visceral violence would come across as kind of like over the top. I feel. If not for the last couple of years happening, like, oh, that couldn't happen in America. But
how much to bet Somber is real mad at lawbreakers that the refugees should be just be coming in legally?
Yeah. I don't know what current timeline Somber is like. But they go in, they explore the building, and they get like BJ kind of gets like. An itchy feeling. I chalk it up to her robo sensor is being a little bit more like a little bit more refined than her regular vision, because she like her like eyes can kind of see the shimmer of like cloaked stuff, which zebras use cloaking technology a lot in this setting. So like she's like, oh, there's something there, and like and sees a faint shimmer, and tackles a zebra that has been tailing them for a little while, who like throws like a smoke bomb at them and freaks out. God, this fucking character. This character is the worst for reasons I don't think Somber quite gets. So they tackle her down. They manage to like get her to calm down. Like, we're not here to actually hurt you. She introduces herself as Xanthi. Xanthi. It's X-A-N-T-H-E. So Xanth, maybe. I don't know. It's a Zed sound. But she's Xanth, and she's very scared. She's some sort of technician, she says, and like part of the zebra remnant. But she's all panicky and freaking out because she is convinced that Blackjack is some sort of like fucking creature of zebra myth called the Star Maiden, or the Maiden of the Stars, who is supposed to bring ruin and destruction everywhere she goes, and is essentially like the like zebra devil, more or less, which was what like Luna was as Nightmare Moon from the original story, which is a big thing in the FOE. So like they're convinced that like BJ is like somehow like the same thing, because she fits a bunch of like the prophecy profile. Like, she comes from the Dead City, as they refer to it as, and she's done a bunch of things that like align with their prophetic belief. So yeah, this is where we get this obnoxious fucking prophecy bullshit. My least favorite trope, which is the foreigners believe more in dumb prophecies than the more secular and not foreigners cliche. But yeah, Blackjack gets tackled by another cloaked ninja zebra who dies in one of the most nightmarish ways I've seen to date in the story, because they like beat up Blackjack, and Blackjack gets some tummy ache from all the glass that she ate, and then just like vomits a bunch of glass onto his face, which like the magic talisman systems that are in Blackjack's like digestive tract keeps the like minerals in a liquid state, but they like stop being a liquid when they exit her body. So like she just vomits a bunch of glass, like reinforced glass, onto the guy's face, and then it just immediately hardens back into glass.
Good job convincing these folks that you're not Satan.
There is kind of a comedy in that, though. Like, I am definitely not Satan. my bad, I turned your friend into a pillar of salt. No biggie.
So anyway, would you like to live deliciously?
Oh, man. But yeah, more cloaked zebras show up, and also Lancer, the character from fucking literally book one at this point, who was like a sniper that was a zebra that killed a bunch of other zebras and like shot Blackjack for the first time. That was the first time Blackjack had a near death scare. They all show up, and they're all also convinced that she's some sort of evil demon Satan child. So they have like a religious right to murder her, but they also do that dumb bullshit that I hate in stories, where they're like, oh, we won't kill you. Our leader, the Caesar, or Kaiser, has said he will personally kill you, so we're keeping you alive until then, and I fucking hate that trope. Like, it's so obnoxious. It's such a, like, dumb reason for, like, a faction to not fight somebody. It's like, no, just fucking kill her. It doesn't, like, it shouldn't matter, but, like, fucking, no, we have to, like, because it only comes up with, like, dumb, goofy, like, honor-bound races like this, because, like, zebras are basically Klingons, and I hate that fucking cliche. It's so stupid. Because just everyone does it. Like, it's such a tired and overused trope that it definitely, like, doesn't need to be repeated in new stories. The rest of the zebras don't seem to be, like, cooperating with Lancer's, like, proclamation about keeping her alive. And then Blackjack kind of, like, is in the middle of hallucinating, and just goes, like, goes fucking full sees red against Lancer, and sort of just starts fucking gutting these zebras violently. And a scene that's, like, not terribly badly descripted. I'm losing words a lot today. It's really well described, at least, of this, like, weird, like, the room is all shifty, she's fighting, like, invisible enemies and cutting through them, like, shrieking about Lancer. It's very evocative. And then her compatriots just get to sit there and be like, what the fuck? Like, again, it's one of those things where you're not doing yourself any favors by saying, like, I'm definitely not the devil. Watch me gut all the... Lancer, I'm gonna kill you! And just gutting a bunch of, like, unrelated zebras. You know, like heroes do. Heck. And then they, BJ calms down, covered in blood. They decide to try and leave the building. They bump into a bunch of some enclavers who are friendly enclavers, because there's a lot of callbacks in this chapter where Blackjack flew like kidnapped a Pegasi for a while, and then became friends with her, and they're from Navarro, and which is the other like major area. It's the more militarized, like, and much more southern Skytown than Thunderhead, which has a lot of problems when you think about it, that the, like, far more militaristic faction between the two major towns is not the bad guys, but the weirdly neo-lib ones are. But we finally learn why everyone is fucking here between Xanthe and Twister, I think her name is. The zebras are here because they're convinced that they've tracked down resting place of some sort of immortal zebra that had an incredibly powerful artifact on them that they want back this place, because they're convinced that this is where the source of the plague, like the raider disease, originally came from. Xanthe corroborates by explaining that it's an old zebran like disease called the blood hunger plague.
It's a mouthful.
Yes.
As far as plagues go.
Yes. It does not roll off the tongue, but
maybe it just has fewer syllables than the native zebra.
Yeah, and zebrin. The blood hunger plague apparently comes up in communities where cannibalism happens, because it's just mad cow disease. Like, that's literally just what it is. Everything about its description has just been mad cow disease. But regardless, yeah, it's when zebras in the past would prey like. Be forced into starving situations and feast on their own. It would then get transmitted to anybody that had to inevitably feast on that person, and so on and so on and so on, and that's how it spreads.
They all come with the spirit of the Wendigo.
Yes.
The Wendigo.
The Wendigo! God. horse puns. Horse puns make me smile. So they decide to team up to try and figure out what everyone needs. They go into the morgue for a while. We get the same kind of garish thing where like none of the corpses are decayed, so there's just a bunch of like splayed open zebras everywhere. The Pegasi get back what they need, like the samples they need, and they check on that they find the name of this immortal pony warrior, this immortal zebra warrior, which is, what's her name? Shura? I can't remember her name, but it's important because she was in the Macintosh Marauders. There's Twist, who was one of the Raider Marauders, and her girlfriend was a zebra who got sent to the camps, and she's 1/6 of Rampage. So this immortal zebra artifact is in Rampage right now, which I don't think ever.
Oh, that thing? You needed that thing? Why didn't you just say so?
But like, okay, so like the worst part about this is like Blackjack never tells them, but like the zebras wanting back this talisman never see. I don't think ever comes up again. Like
what?
Okay. Like it. Like I could be wrong. Like it's been a long time, and like I really checked out during the time that the zebra. Like by the time the site, like the Caesar and the zebra remnant stuff came up, I was pretty checked out by that point. But I don't think the talisman ever comes up again. Like the zebras wanting it back never comes up again. But I could be wrong in that case. But yeah.
Sounds like Somber's MO though. Like
yeah, we're getting close to the end. But yeah, just as they're exiting the building, they get flagged down by a bunch more Pegasi. Who BJ guesses are Thunderhead Pegasi, which is, I don't know how she would know the difference between their, like, anything about them. But they don't even talk, which kind of is annoying that, like, we spent all this time, like, you know, getting to know our bad guys and getting to know the villains, and, like, they're not all of them are evil, and then, like, these Thunderhead guys are just, like, stormtroopers. They just fly down and just start attacking everyone. And BJ guesses that Light Hooves is among them, but, like, again, how she would know, I have no idea. Like, is he just wearing a name tag that says, like, I'm Lighthoof? Because they're all in armor, right? Like, they're not, like they're not just flying around in military uniforms. They're in power armor. So, like, they would be, like, identical. They all just look like stormtroopers. So, like, I don't, like, it's not, like, not even making a nitpick. I just don't know how Blackjack would know that. Like, at best, she's just guessing, I guess. But admittedly, a bloodlusty Rampage Blackjack is still kicking around. Fucking Blackjack just goes absolutely fucking feral. And I'm going to do a bad job of explaining this, but this is actually like the coolest fight in this entire story up to this point and maybe going forwards. Because even though they're like kind of like no-name mooks, there is a lot of sell here, at least. Like, Between the zebras, who are established as being very, very tough customers, fighting these harbingers, which Blackjack has actually been able to, like, handle her own, like, there's a lot of really good sell here that Blackjack is actually capable, which has been, like, rare. Like, whatever, like, Blackjack is a one-note character, but, like, even that note hasn't really been playing for the last little while, so it's nice to have, like, oh, the thing she's good at? Cool, she just gets to do the thing she's good at. So we get a lot of really cool, goofy fight scene stuff where, like, despite them having, like, air superiority and better guns and better equipment, Blackjack is just trashing the shit out of them. A couple of highlights that come to mind is there's a bit where, like, Blackjack just kind of, like, grabs one by the faceplate and just, like, magic bullets him in the face through his visor because, like, she can just manifest the magic bullets in his face.
Okay.
Dicing them open like tin cans because her sword can cut through anything.
Forgot about her katana.
Yeah, she's got a katana and it can cut through anything. So she's just dicing through these fools. Like, I'm mocking it a little, but like I will say this is actually a really cool and engaging fight, because like most of the time I just fucking completely check out. There's almost nothing worth in these reading in these things. But like, because this is a cool fight where it's all working on multiple levels, like, you know, you're fighting enemies that can fly and are in power armor and have better guns. So having to like maneuver around them is really creative in this particular sequence. Like, there's just a lot going on.
I don't know. The only thing that I can imagine, the only thing that's coming to my mind is a character with like My Little Pony proportions.
Uh-huh.
Like a small horse in a flash animation, flying small horse Nazi stormtroopers in the sky. Telekinetically, she pulls out her katana and begins rotating it like a helicopter blade, and like a small horse like levitating in the midst of a whirling. Helicopter, like a whirling like blur shape, like the rings of Saturn, and well, Ace of Spades by Motorhead plays. Like.
So yeah, but at the same time, like it's I don't know, like it's cool in motion. I guess is the thing I'm insisting. It still has my favorite highlight of Blackjack fighting a flying opponent and kind of just beating the shit out of them while they're both in the air, which is really fun. But this all gets abruptly stopped when she like manages to like knife her like flying opponent a couple of times and crashes into the ground. And there's like the bit where she's like over top of the other one with swords like in hoof fingers.
So awful.
Like, that's the thing. I'm fucking super down for the Dissonance, so, like, this is just rad to me. This is just fucking air guitar the whole time. This isn't the dumb parts for me. The dumb parts is the part where it tries to make this seem serious. But in a last moment, like, the person she's been knifing for the last little while, her helmet comes off and reveals that, like, it's Glory's sister, Dusk. Oh no, she's been stabbing Glory's sister for the last little while. Which is the only thing that manages to break her out of her blood rage.
Hold on, start, nothing will be nothing, Glory's sister.
Like, I think that's what the big sell for this entire sequence for me is I'm a big sucker for, like, just characters seeing red and just, like, fucking chewing through people. It's used well in this sequence. Like, it's the same way that I can kind of give props to the opening of Stable 99, where, like, Stable 99 does a cool narrative thing by having, like, Blackjack killing ponies and then, like, rattling off, like, their names and who they were and little details about them that she can remember as she's killing, like, the zombified husk that they are now. It's kind of a cool, like, zombie fiction trope that, like, I never see that is a cool, like, way of handling that.
Yeah.
And in the same way with this, it's just, it's... Like, it works in motion. Like, it works in reading it that, like, it's this, like, this sequence where Blackjack is just, she's out of her depth, she's going nuts, she's seeing hallucinations, she's deeply sleep deprived, she's running on fumes in a bunch of ways, and she's got a belly full of glass, and that isn't going so well for her. Then, like, these, like, enclavers descend on her, and it's just like uncoiling a spring. Like, it's a bunch of pent up shit that she's just like spins off.
All Brock Sampson. All right.
Well, so
what happens? So is I presume the rest of them are
our denouement is her like freaking out about this, understandably, and just kind of like throwing Dusk to her newfound friends and just being like, get her to the skyport, like, patch her up as best you can and get her to skyport, like, I can't, like, do anything about this, and I can't handle this right now, and Xanthe's like, but, like, I'm a zebra, and I don't like you, and she's like, I'm a blood monster, I will cut you in half, like, now,
you really want to have an argument with Satan right now?
Like, now is not the time. Now is not the time to discuss tense racial tension. It is time to save the horse. And the chapter ends with with Blackjack like looking up and seeing what she assumes is light hooves like flying back up into the sky, like menacing her with the samples being taken, and she just kind of like, I don't know. I'm assuming it's meant to be a callback to the scene where she like when she uses the gun to blow up the vertibuck, and then she's like doesn't have any more ammo, so she just like points it at light hooves in the sky and like makes the click noise. It's sort of something like a callback to that, where she's just kind of staring up and she's just spent and just like fuming at his like gray silhouette in the sky.
So despite everything, they all fail.
Yes,
like they all fail in the like. Well, again, I guess this is because Pegasi are just innately superior to all other equine life.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit more reasonable in this particular case. Blackjack just murdered the fuck out of, like, all the zebras, and then, like, Pegasi that showed up were all, like, not having fought, a small skirmish for the last couple of hours. So they're not haggard and also in better armor and in better, like, better equipment. So it was, it doesn't really seem like it's that much of a stretch for them to just show up and be like, all right, taking those samples and fucking off.
I don't, I think I'm just doing the, like, I'm being cynical as, I'm prepping myself for all of this push to like, result in another, like, fart instead of a pop again.
Well, what do you mean specifically? Like, push for who?
Well, like with Sanguine, like, okay, he's so bad, he's so evil, he's so dangerous. His allies are so bad, they're so evil, they're so dangerous. And then, like, oh no, he was a moron who, like, fucked up the entire setting to, like, save his family, and he's willing to throw, like, thousands of lives under the bus for that. We should feel sorry for him. And oh, also he actually never did do all of that. And now we're back on the enclave of like, okay, this is so in wrestling terminology, this is a huge like moment to gain extra heat. Like this in a normal story, this would be good writing. Like in a normal story, this would be okay. We're building up to a big confrontation with one of our big heels. We're building heel heat for the new enemy. We go through all of this trouble. Never mind the protagonist is here for nonsense reasons. Now that she is here, we have a reason provided for her, and that is we're getting samples that are essential to perhaps like paving the way for a cure for Ritter's disease, and. Inexplicably, like at the last moment, the bad guy shows up to snatch away the hard won thing, which would be perfect heel heat. Would be a perfect setup for like a final big pop of a showdown, like wherein the villain, after all the frustration, after all the buildup, is finally vanquished. And all the MacGuffins that have been seized from us up to this point are in one convenient place for a happy denouement. But after what happened with Sanguine, like
you are skeptical, So yeah, I don't remember entirely how Lighthoof goes down. I remember the Thunderhead arc is the not worst arc, but it's the most. This could have been completely exempt from the story. And nothing would have mattered, like nothing would have changed moments in the entire thing.
Well, it might as well be the plot. Like he like Lighthoof's whole fucking deal has been going on longer, has been better explained.
Yeah.
And more coherent than anything Sanguine.
So I think the funny part about that is I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that like the Enclave are an already previous established like faction within FOE. Like they're already a thing in the original story. So like he's just building on a already strong foundation, and I think that's a lot of the reason why they just feel more compelling and more evil and better is because like a better story wrote them first, and they're just like, you know, baton passing.
Just still painting in those same lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So I have my left-handed compliment for this whole deal was. Yeah, no, this is great heel heat.
Yes.
For for a final showdown that, like,
might just be flaccid and awful.
I know is going to be flaccid as fuck.
Yeah, we still have, like, what, like, three more villains to fight? Like, major villains in the story? Yeah, that's the end of their chapter, is them just making angry eyes at each other. But yeah, no, I still stand by. I think this chapter, like, this chapter is just, like, the last time this happened at the end of, like, book two. The end of book two. Where it's like, okay, if this pace was more persistent, this story would be a fuck ton better. Like, it doesn't always have to be super high tempo, but, like, things happened in this chapter. Like, a huge chunk of things happened. Like, Blackjack met a bunch of new people. We learned a bunch of new things about the gangers. We established a bunch of, like threads for later storylines. There's been an escalation with the Enclave. The Zebras are becoming more relevant. We learned more about the past. Blackjack got to show off a bunch of her fucking skills, which is a much, much needed thing after becoming Robo-Jesus. Like, this is for this story a good chapter. Like, it's definitely a much better showing than there typically is. And it doesn't have to always be, like, catastrophic change. Yeah,
no. I actually do have to say that this chapter is an extraordinary aberration. Like, everything you told me about this chapter seems pretty solid. Even the part where, like, fucking Rampage becomes, like, yet more of an ultra special precious baby, like even more aggravatingly super extra awesome special. It is in a way that, like, it's through a story hook. Like, it's a thing that, like, if I had to put up with a player at my table who had this, like, fucking mess of an extra special backstory, I as a GM would do this as, like, a plot hook. Like, okay, so you've got, like, six personalities going on from, like, ancient, like, from what in this setting regards as ancient pre-war history. Okay, fine. Here it's revealed that one of them is Xena.
Yes.
And that's significant in a lot of ways.
Some kind of Zebran war goddess. Yeah. Like, at least it's something is moving. Like, there's an actual, like, a development about them that we've learned. It's not just, like, they're not just unused hook.
Yeah, this chapter is really good, which makes it all the more aggravating in context of everything that came before and shall come after.
Yeah, like, three fucking chapters of just nothing before we got here is really annoying.
Three fucking books?
Well, but the thing is, like, I had to read them, though. Like, I had to fucking read, like, three chapters of, like, oh, this, like, fucking nothing happens. Sure could go for something good happening. And, like, I knew this scene was coming. I just didn't remember, like when it was happening. So I was kind of, like, pleasantly surprised this week when I read them. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, more good thing happening. Like, that's good. I like that. I like when good things happen. I'm a very simple horse. I enjoy things that are good.
Is there anything better we could be doing, though?
So I'm going to give kind of, like, a one and a half recommendations again. Because I went through some dental surgery this week, so I haven't had a whole lot of time. I would like to partially rescind my kind of mean-spirited description of Red 36 that I gave last week, of describing it as painfully average. I think it has a very, very... I think it has a, like, pretty mundane start that didn't necessarily wow me. But I think at least, though, it has a couple of really cool, solid hooks. It's... Like, it's established as a post-original story fic, which I've always considered to be a strong point in these, because they're very rarely done. And having a hook that the main character insists she saw some Enclave ships off in the distance that no one can corroborate with, but is a cool hook, because we don't know if she's right or not. Like, it's not like PH, where, like, all theories are inevitably true. So there's actually, like, there's actually a mystery to the story happening. Coupled with, I just enjoy the protagonist's kind of, like, you know, sad, ironic backstory, in that, like, her entire family was killed by the Enclave, and then it being really revealed in, like, chapter two, which is kind of early, but whatever, that, like, she, like, had a massive falling out with her family just right before that happened, which is always a nice little twist to the knife. It's like, oh yeah, like, it's the, like, I never want to see you again. Oh, they've been vaporized. That's awful. Kind of moment. And I think that's, like, a much more, like, compelling backstory than just raw, I want revenge, kind of storytelling. So, I don't know. I think I'm very forgiving of anything that isn't PH, but I think that in this case, I think this is doing a better job of doing stuff that's similar feeling to the way that Blackjack is. Like, the main character is also a gambling thing. Her name is Roulette as opposed to Blackjack. So, like, there is definitely, like, a feeling, like, not necessarily invoked feeling, but definitely, like, an implication of, like, similarity between these characters, and I enjoy the Roulette a lot more. Yeah, that's my going recommendation. I'm just gonna keep at, this has now become the podcast within the podcast about a fanfic that's a different fanfic than this fanfic that I am pleasantly enjoying. I also need to get caught up on Dead End, but whatever. I gotta read Vina Kava, whatever. There's a bunch of good stuff that's coming from cool authors that I have weirdly started making friends with, and also pissed off one of them. Sorry about that, buddy. This is also half an apology. I kind of made an ass of myself on my Discord, but that's not neither here nor there. That's, I guess, my recommendation half review. I don't know.
All right. All I've got is the Yawg. That's YAWHG. Is on sale right now. Last I checked, for something like $3 or so, and it's definitely a worth at least a $3 purchase. It's charming. It's basically like it's a slice of life simulator kind of. Like it's 6 weeks in a town before a disaster hits, and it has this weird gimmick. I don't know. I kind of suspect that it might. It looks like one of those games that was designed with streaming in mind. Like it's a multiplayer story game, but you can play it just as easily by yourself. It has a weird gimmick of you go through each day individually, and you assign characters to different parts of the town.
Mm-hmm.
Before the Yawg hits. So when you choose a place for your character to go, a random event happens to them there, and sometimes there's a choice of how to respond to the event. And one of the fun gimmicks is that events will carry over from one location to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And there seem to be lasting consequences for actions taken. In previous days, and even on concurrent days, so it's a fun story, and the sort of challenge of the game is to see if you can help the town recover from the Yawg. Like, does the town is the town forever destroyed by the Yawg, or can your collective decisions result in the Yawg being able to the town being able to recover? Well, you can contact Fi by his rather not safe at work account, Thou Art Fi. You can contact me by my actually entirely safe for work account, at Weirdington E. You can email me directly. I've got a fan mailbox for you. At Weirdington ESQ, that's Weirdington Esquire, pronounced. At Weirdington ESQ at gmail.com. Send us any questions directly. We always appreciate it when you validate us.
Yeah.
With your likes and subscriptions.
Yeah.
And hearts and stars.
And very nice reviews that we've gotten from people. I read the horse.
The dark gods, yeah, of the algorithm. Oh, teased by your...
Yeah, I read, like, Horace Poole's review, and it was very nice. I do enjoy that a huge chunk of our audience are, like, I didn't read PH because I heard it was bad, and listening to this podcast has revealed that it's much worse than I was ever sold on it. Like, no one was prepared.
Yeah, there seems to be two responses. One, I heard it was bad, but I had no idea. And the other one was, yeah, I read it at the time. I have read it myself, and I haven't been able to articulate why.
Yeah,
I think
Horse Pool's one was the review, and if I'm wrong about this, I'm sorry. But, like, articulated my favorite response that I've seen so far, which was, like, I didn't have words to put into what I felt about this. And I think that really, like, that warms the cockles of my horse heart. Because that's literally, like, I guess kind of, like, why I wanted to make this podcast in the first place was, like, the only way I was ever going to talk about this in a way that made any sense was to say a lot of words about why it's bad. And it's nice to know that other people are like, I don't like it, but to explain it would take literally, I don't know, how long is this podcast at this point?
Many hours.
At least 36 hours, at the very least, when you think about it, because we've done 36 episodes. 37, actually. So we've done 37 hours worth of content, at the very least. Give or take an episode. So it takes more than a day of complaining to really sell how bad this is. But yeah, I think that is pumped the fan mail, pumped everything else. Yeah. Oh, also you can donate directly to Weirington at the Ko-Fi page. We will eventually have a Patreon.
We still need sprucing up.
Yes, we also I'm definitely gonna try and push for this month to be the first month we get a bonus episode out, so we'll be having a Patreon and a bonus episode. Our first bonus episode will likely be us reviewing the FOE RPG, or at least one of them, because I know there's more than one.
It's going to hurt me so bad.
Yeah. Weird likes tabletop games, and so do I, so it's going to hurt.
I spent, like, the better part of a decade of my life, like, feverishly studying tabletop RPGs. Like, game design generally, but specifically, like, the mechanics of how tabletop RPGs work. What does and does not function at a table, what advice is good and bad to put in a book, like all the best books, the most well-claimed books, like what have they done as opposed to what others like have or haven't. Like I have deep dived down into the far depths of the well of like what it takes to write not only a successful but like an impactful RPG, like one that people will actually bring to their table and remember. So I am super invested in what are good versus bad decisions in RPG design.
Yeah, and that'll be
tabletop RPG design, and this is gonna burn.
And that'll be at the $5 tier. Depending on how dense the book is, it might actually even be more than one episode, depending on how it goes. But yeah, and then maybe we'll make gen characters and then joke about playing it, but probably never play it. And then if I ever do anything,
it'll be a subscriber exclusive series.
Yeah, and if we ever do anything that's actually live play, it will absolutely not be under that system. It'll likely be like Apocalypse World hacked to shit to be about horses. Is going to be the most likely one.
Not hard to do.
Or Savage anyway. Worlds, because Savage Worlds you can just hack into whatever.
You know what? Yeah. Yeah,
at least like pulpy
it's a
stuff.
Weird thing to do with Savage Worlds. Yeah. Oh man. I don't wanna. This has all been a terrible mistake.